Hello, and welcome to Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, and doing our audio engineering today is James Ziborot. Here on Teen Scientist, I bring you stories of groundbreaking innovation in the STEAM disciplines entirely from a youth perspective. We feature young researchers and respected experts in their fields at the local, national, and international levels. Today, I'm honored to be joined by two incredible women who are leading the change right here in Philadelphia. First, we have Sally McCabe, the Associate Director of Community Education at the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society. Now, if you've ever walked through one of Philly's community gardens, chances are Sally's fingerprints are somewhere in that soil. Sally spent over 40 years, yes, four decades, dedicated to helping neighborhoods green their spaces, build communities, and take ownership of their environment. She started her journey with Penn State Urban Gardening Program, later worked with the Philadelphia Green, and today at PHS. She led initiatives like the Garden Tenders Program and Green City Teachers, empowering thousands of people to become environmental stewards. She's also a seasoned writer, a fierce community advocate, and a hands-on teacher, someone who believes in putting power tools in the hands of kids and watching them change the world. And also joining us is Mia Fox, an environmental scientist who's bringing a new generation of ideas to green cities. Mia holds a master's in environmental studies from the University of Pennsylvania, and her work focuses on stormwater management, urban ecology, and reimagining the way we build our cities so the nature isn't pushed out, it's invited back. She's helped lead projects at PHS that don't just make the city more beautiful, but they make it more resilient to climate change. Together, Sally and Mia are showing us that science doesn't just live in labs or textbooks. It lives in gardens, parks, sidewalks, and streets. So how are you guys today?
Well, we're glad to be here.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you. So Sally, let's start with you. You've been an educator, a gardener, a mentor, and an advocate for so long. But if you go way back, what first drew you to gardening and the environmental work?
When I was a kid, I was the third kid, and my chore was to pull weeds in the garden. We had not a great garden and a lot of weeds, and I got to start to appreciate the weeds rather than the garden because there were so many choices and there were so many colors and a lot of flowers, and I got hooked. And also, as kids, we had chickens and we had ducks. And I realized I wanted to be a farmer. And that never changed.
Was it more about loving plants or loving the idea of building something kind of with your hands or kind of what?
Oh, I like to build things, but it was watching things grow and watching things pop up out of the ground in a
Yeah.
matter of days and turn into something. It was like the Jack and the Beanstalk story in real life.
Yeah, so you took that passion, you went to the Penn State. What was the experience like for you? Were you already thinking like using science and community work?
Well, I didn't start out in horticulture. I still holding to the idea that I was going to be a farmer of some sort, or I was going to be taking care of animals. I started out in veterinary medicine.
Oh.
And I went through veterinary medicine. I was comparative literatures, religious studies. I mean, it was like college was an eye opener for me that there were so many possibilities out there. But my second choice was always the gardening choice, the plants, the animals, the farming.
Yeah.
And so by the time I settled on declaring a major, it was horticulture.
I feel like that's such like a great thing about college, and especially now in science, is there's so many fields that you can go into, and like in those fields there's subsections and kind of figuring it out, and just like how you can go from being a vet to then what you do now is like so crazy to me, and it's so cool how you can like find your path.
Well, the other thing that that moved me was I was in 10th grade when the first Earth Day happened. And that opened a lot of our eyes to the idea of us having an influence on the environment and the environment, not just the environment, having an influence on us. And I think that was what pushed me more than anything toward knowing I wanted to study some sort of science.
And it's so great like that schools do that too now, and you experienced it and had that in school because it just is such an eye opener, I feel like, to students, like you said. So, Mia, I'd love to hear your story too. Today, you're an environmental scientist working with cities and communities, but where did kind of like your journey begin?
Sure. So I am Pennsylvania through and through, but I'm from the other side of the state in Allegheny County, just outside of Pittsburgh, is where I was born and grew up. And so I was really privileged to be in a city that was very post-industrial and focused a lot on greening after it had a legacy of sort of negative environmental impacts. And because of that, I got to see a lot of newer emerging landscape projects, especially by way of like stream water remediation. And the first time sort of spending time outside for me would be classic family memory. My dad really enjoyed fishing. He loved fly fishing. And so he took me out when I was maybe in like fifth grade. I didn't catch anything, but he said, "Hold on a minute, put a rock on the top of my line," and then stood back and had me take a picture like I was reeling in some kind of a giant fish. So that's where the curiosity got started, and it kind of blossomed from there, just exploring around.
Yeah, and it blossomed later into college where you went to the University of Pennsylvania and you kind of went through all of that. So how was that like?
Actually, my undergraduate degree was completed in rural Ohio, funny enough. Yes. So I got my master's in Philadelphia, but I spent many years in a place called Knox County, Ohio. And that was just truly beautiful. Talk about wanting to be a farmer, Sally, in a very different way, a plant farmer for sure. That really set the scene for interest. Much like Sally, I was all over the place, but I couldn't decide between English and biology. And in fact, I had some really influential mentors and professors that kind of hosted courses about both, which was not good for my indecisiveness.
Oh, yeah.
But yes, like a course, I took a course on science writing, and I read an amazing book called The Botany of Desire by Michael Pollan. That one kind of makes the rounds sometimes. I feel like I hear that name in this world.
Yeah.
And then I also took a course about literature around the Mississippi River Valley.
Oh,
And
that's interesting.
it was really interesting because it also sort of touched on the socioeconomic value of the environment and what that means for us, especially as it regards race in the Mississippi River Valley. So I had a lot going through my mind studying English and a lot going through my mind studying biology, and I decided I wanted to do both. And then afterwards, graduating, I had a wonderful mentor, Noelle Jordan at the Brown Family Environmental Center. She said, "Go get your master's and go do it in a city because you haven't spent any time in a city." And so that's what took me to Philadelphia and UPenn. And it was a completely different world. I saw new and challenging problems. And yeah, it's been wonderful getting to sink my teeth into those more as I've stayed here.
Yeah, I know. Like, what you guys have done is so amazing. So, let's kind of get into that and talk a little bit about your careers. So, Sally, you've spent years with Penn State Urban Gardening Program and then transitioned into working with PHS. How did those kind of experience shape your career path?
Well, when I got out of school, I still wanted to be a farmer, but in those days, back in when dinosaurs roamed the earth, as a woman, it was really hard to get into farming. And I saw this job. I was working at a feed mill, in fact. I saw this job announcement that they were looking for people to teach gardening in the city as part of a federally funded program through Penn State, the Penn State Urban Gardening Program. And I was hooked. I didn't get the job because they looked at me and they said, "Little girl from the burbs is going to get eaten alive by the city." And eventually I wore them down. And I think the 11th of 8 staff positions, because they kept losing people. And finally they said, "Well, that girl from the suburbs, maybe we'll give her a chance." And that was it. That was it for me. So I was there for 8 years, and I learned to not be shy. I learned to speak in front of groups. I learned that I loved to work teaching kids, and that every day I went to work learning something new. And that's been a major influence to me, in good times and in bad times, is that I have to keep myself open to every day learning something new from the people, and the environment around me. So, when the job opened up at PHS, the Horticultural Society, through the Philadelphia Green Program, it was way more pay than Penn State, and they actually gave me a desk to sit at, when I needed it, and a car to drive when I needed. And I said, "Whoa, big time!" Of course, I had to share the car with eight other people, but it was okay. And I got to continue to work with community people throughout Philadelphia. And 45 years later, I am still doing it because every day I go to work and I still learn things.
I was just going to say, you've talked a lot about how you learn every day and you love learning, but with learning obviously comes setbacks. Were there moments when you kind of doubted yourself or ever wondered if you were ever making an impact and how that kind of affected you?
Oh, yeah, every other day. Every day you learn something, but sometimes the things that you learn aren't positive or aren't don't help. But at times like that, the people who garden are inherently good people. And even when the politics of the world or the politics of the job or the politics of the reporting that you have to do and the this and the that and the other, to sit down and talk to somebody in a garden just sort of charges your battery and renews your faith in mankind when the bureaucracy gets to you.
That's honestly amazing to hear. I feel like I've never met anyone who like gardens who's mean ever, like you said.
Oh, there are, but you really have to look for them.
I mean, I feel like it's just such an industry where people are always like open-minded and like open to learn new things, like you said, and new learning. And today at PHS, you've helped thousands of people through programs like Garden Tenders. For people who might not know, could you explain kind of what Garden Tenders is and why it's so important?
Sure. Garden Tenders is a class that we put together because there were so many people that wanted to garden, but the system that was being used to get people their gardens was waiting lists and bureaucracy. And there's only money in this zip code or from this council person. And I said, well, this is silly because there are so many DIYers out there, people that are just ready to get permission or a blessing or a shovel, and they'll put their own gardens together. So we built the Garden Tender program, and pretty much in it now, it has evolved over time because it's been going on since 1995, I think. This week is the last night for cohort number 52. So we build a support group. We put a bunch of newbie gardeners in the room, and we not groom them, that's a bad word.
You get them ready.
We get them ready because honestly, if you can learn the skills to organize a community garden, this is not just people that want to know how to plant tomatoes, it's people that want to know how to reclaim a vacant lot and make it into something of beauty and use to provide food and flowers and all of that stuff. But though there's a lot of skill needed that's not gardening skill. And you need to learn to communicate, talk to people, plan ahead, anticipate disaster and plan for it, all of those things. The reason that these programs have evolved, they started out as something to help people grow food, but what they really are is teaching people life skills that are then applicable everywhere in life. So if you can learn to if everybody would garden together, the whole world would be saved because everybody would learn how to talk to each other, how to communicate, how to plan together, how to support each other. And also then you get tomatoes and flowers.
It's all like a win-win.
Yeah, it's all win-win. So yeah, so that's the Garden Tenders program in a very large nutshell. That was a lot of words.
It's great to
But
hear, though, that
teach
there's.
people to garden and they get life skills.
Yeah, it's great to hear that there's kind of a program out there that does that and you contribute to it, which is so important. I feel like every community should have a garden tenders. So we're going to take a short break. I'm here with Mia and Sally, and we'll be right back. I'm your host, Abigail Wood.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm your host, Abigail Wood, back here with Mia and Sally. So Mia, you work as an environmental scientist at PHS, who kind of touches on stormwater, sustainability, and education. Can you kind of walk us through what a typical project looks for you?
Yes, a typical project, any typical day would be actually rather boring. Turns out there's a lot of administrative work when it comes to getting work in the environment done. So,
I never imagined that.
I know. Phone calls, emails.
That's so fun.
Spreadsheets. But a project for me semi-annually and my team at large is helping us plant street trees in the city of Philadelphia and in the counties around Philadelphia. So my particular focus is helping those folks in the counties around Philadelphia get trees. And then at the end of our process, sort of reconciling all the information that we get from those trees. So where they were planted, what species is planted there? Is it going to, you know, survive in a few years? These are the long-term kind of goals of any one project for myself and for my team, the trees team. When we plant trees in the city, it also looks like working with the city to figure out whether or not they're also doing program work in these locations. So we work with the city's water department to make sure we aren't double planting a site. We work with community groups, CDCs, to make sure that we're planting things people want and we're committing to a place that actually wants something. So that's generally what a project looks like. And as I mentioned, the specifics are rather boring. Lots of data management, lots of mapping. Actually, that can be really cool if you like maps and working on computers using a system called GIS, which is a mapping program. And then we have other software that helps us track our tree plantings throughout the city. So that's a typical project for myself and my team.
Yeah, with all of the work you do, kind of how does that translate into the real physical change in a city, kind of like Philadelphia?
Real physical change, I think, is best illustrated whenever you plant trees in a part of the city and you can track their growth over the next few years. And then you can track changes like decreased heat in one particular area of the sidewalk because you have a tree that has increased the tree canopy or shade. It also results in physical changes. And there have been studies with partners at the University of Pennsylvania about how things like gardens, what Sally works on, how things like trees, how things like remediating vacant lots. We have another team at PHS that focuses solely on that. How things like this, greening and cleaning, can actually improve people's health. It's correlation, not causation. So we don't know if it actually causes it, but we love that when we plant a tree in a neighborhood and we have a tree-lined block, we see that the residents there have better heart health, that they are happier, less depressed. So physical change can look like a lot of things, Abigail, and it's really exciting, but it does require a massive amounts of patience. I'm sure Sally can attest to this. I mean, you've been doing this for many years, so sometimes that's the only time you can really see that physical change is, you know, after 2 dozen years. or more. But that's how I feel the science sort of translates into physical change.
Yeah. I mean, with the science, I'd love to get a little bit more into that, and especially how the science shows up, like you've said, in everyday places. Sally, when people hear gardens, they sometimes just think of like pretty flowers and like nice tomatoes, but community gardens can actually help with things like food security, mental health, and climate resilience. Can you kind of talk about some of the science-backed benefits of gardening?
Eating fresh food is going to make you healthy. It's going to cure everything. Not really, but it certainly contributes toward good health. Being outside around plants that help to filter the air is cleaner in a garden. As Mia said, things are cooler. I want to say it affects your heart, not just your heart. The studies of people have better health, but your heart of hearts. Sitting in a green space calms you down. It makes you relax. It makes you breathe better. I guess I'm saying it doesn't
overall,
just help your health. It helps
yeah.
your mental health. It just calms you down.
Yeah. Overall, like even the gardening process, gardening can calm you and kind of having the
touching the earth and being grounded. But on top of everything else, I want to tell you about quickly about a program that is part of our community gardens.
Yeah,
and that's
I
the
would love
City
to.
City Harvest program. Because like we said earlier, gardeners are good-hearted people. Maybe because they spend more time outside and are calmer. I know some pretty wacko gardeners. But the City Harvest program was set up to help people grow excess food to feed to soup kitchens and food banks and to get more fresh food out into the community. And we work with a network of between 150 and 200 gardens that actually put aside a section of their garden to grow for other people. I learned something philosophical this year from my housemate who was taking a course in community organizing. And I said, "What is your biggest takeaway?" And he said, "The best place to store your extra food is in your neighbor's stomach."
Oh, that's a
and
good
it just so
way to think about
spoke
it.
to me. It's like, yes, there's extra food, you're feeding other people, but you're building community.
Yeah, and having the connection with your neighbors and communicating, like you said, and I feel like it just opens so many
It
doors.
opens so many doors.
Besides that, like that's something that people don't realize. Is there anything else kind of people don't realize of the power that gardening really gives you?
I think that's enough for me.
Yeah.
That's enough to make me.
Right. The power of connections. And
well, that is so true. There are so many stories.
And the having that human connection and sharing that with somebody, and not even maybe sharing gardening, but like you said, feeding someone's stomach and like sharing with food and cooking, and that can bring culture into everything. And
oh, you just hit the big one, culture. People from so many cultures bring gardening to Philadelphia. There are so many different styles and varieties of food, and people come here from other countries and they cannot get the food that they're used to at home. And the community gardens and small farms around here allow them to grow some of their own, or maybe even to sell some to other people of similar cultures so that they can maintain stuff from their cultures and also maybe eat better and maybe make a little money.
Yeah, of course. So I'd love to switch back to Mia now. You work a lot with kind of management and stormwater, which sounds super technical, but it's actually about something very basic, keeping our water clean and our city safe. Could you kind of explain in simple terms why stormwater matters and how green spaces kind of help?
Of course. Stormwater in Philadelphia is a really interesting history. So if you want to learn more, I encourage you to seek out resources from the water department. They have a variety of information, handouts on the history of stormwater in Philadelphia, because we are such an old city, right? The very simple story of stormwater in Philadelphia is that we are a city And we have something called gray infrastructure, which is the built environment. It's our homes, it's sidewalks, it's roads. It's anything that you wouldn't think of when you're thinking of green space, so our natural environment. And the natural environment, like if you were to take a bunch of rain and have it flow through a natural environment, like a piece of, I don't know, uncut land, like maybe Fairmount Park, you'll notice that there's not a lot of runoff, meaning the water kind of sinks deeply into the ground. But if you're in, let's say, Center City, that water is going to bounce off all of those buildings, all of that sidewalk, and you have a lot of runoff. In fact, it's about 55% of the rain that falls goes right back into our storm water system. It might not seem like a big deal, but that's carrying all of the stuff with it. So all of the garbage, all of the trash, all of the dust, all of the septa sludge, all of our body sweat, all the oils from that, all getting pushed into our system. And stormwater matters in Philadelphia because we have an old system, a system that combines sewage and stormwater. So normally the sewage from our homes just flows right into our treatment plants and it's all good, but it has a big pipe. But if we have a lot of stormwater, all that runoff, that 55%, is going into that same tube with our sewage.
Ooh.
And some of that goes to our treatment plant like normal, but sometimes our system is just so overwhelmed that some of it goes off directly into our rivers. So stormwater management, meaning taking some of that water and capturing it in things like gardens, in things like tree plantings, and things like parks, is really important because of our old aging system. So stormwater matters in Philadelphia because we want clean drinking water. We want our environment to not have our gross trash water in it.
Yeah.
And green spaces can help, particularly planting trees and any green space, really, because they help capture that runoff. They're not a sidewalk where water just rolls off of it.
So you both, Mia and Sally, you both work on bettering Philadelphia in so many ways. If you could like redesign one part of Philly, kind of what would you do?
I know what I would do, Sally.
I have so many things.
I know. So I'll start off with a brief story. I visited New York City for the first time last week. Can't believe it's taken me this long. Their public transportation system is amazing. And if we had more people taking public transportation and more reliable public transportation, we'd get a lot less exhaust. We'd have a lot less congestion and traffic and maybe fewer of those gray spaces. So I would say really beefing up our public transportation system would be amazing. I also think trains are so cool.
Are so beneficial in so many ways, like not even just it's like environment exhaust, then also saving space and also your ears, those get saved.
Exactly. And you have opportunities to create little parklets to plant more trees around places where you can enter and exit. I have a lot of ideas for transportation. Sally, what are your ideas?
My changes would be political. I would make land more accessible. We have so much vacant land in Philadelphia, and so much of it is not being taken care of. To make it easier for people to adopt land so that they can clean and green it. And also, I would like to have a garden in every school.
I love that. I feel like kids always need that. My elementary school had a garden and we focus on Earth Days, and I loved doing it and getting a tree every year. And that's just so memorable for me. And I feel like every kid needs that.
Every kid needs that.
Yes. Well, thank you both so much for joining me. I love how you both have shown the science isn't just about facts and numbers, but it's about the connection, creativity, and community that gardens can really bring. So I hope you guys have a great day. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, here with Teen Scientist.